Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly conference call. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. This is the Persuasion, Negotiation, Influence, Self-Persuasion call. And I want to make sure that those that are new, welcome. Those that are listening via the internet, welcome also. Some are on the live call. Some will be doing replay. That is, of course, posted at whypersuasion.com, whypersuasion.com. Just going to spend 15 minutes talking about a tool of persuasion, answer some questions about what we talked about today, things that you're running into, just kind of a quick interactive forum to make sure you're thinking about it every week and the importance, and add a few more tools. Because if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, as you know, you treat everybody like a nail. So a lot of questions come up about, of course, maximizing your influence and how do you convince when you're not in charge? How do you persuade when you're not in the right position? How do you lead when you're not the boss? How do you negotiate when maybe you're not even included in the negotiation? And a lot of people forget about influencing up. So you're going to influence to a CEO, to an upper manager maybe, whatever it is. You might be trying to influence somebody in a different company, the decision maker. You have different forms of power, but you have to realize a lot of people forget about the CEO and the stress that they're under, that they also could have low self-esteem and probably will cover it up. They do not admit it. They also have an ego because they're under a lot of pressure to look like they know what they're doing. They may not feel that way. They have the pressure to always make the right decisions, always be up, always do the right things. I mean, they have a lot of pressure there, and we forget about their ego and their esteem. And this is a big issue, and law of esteem, of course, is one of the 12 laws of persuasion, that we forget that ego and self-esteem and all those things have a big impact on your ability to persuade and influence. Because if you bruise an ego, the doors of persuasion will swing closed. You enhance an ego, you boost someone's self-esteem, it opens it up. And we forget about that. And this is, especially in corporate training, many of you entrepreneurs, some of you are in corporate, that a lot of somebody from marketing we'll go over to IT and say, I have got a great idea. I have a way you can solve this. I found the perfect solution for you and your department. Really? And then they're thinking, well, they might even think it's a subconscious trigger that, wait a minute, it's my department. They don't care if it's a great idea. They didn't come up with it. It's not their idea. Who are you to come up with it? Even though it's a no-brainer to you, and probably on paper it's a no-brainer, there's going to be some resistance. So you really have to understand that with ego, we all want to feel important. We all want respect, approval. Deep inside of every one of us, we want to feel important. And the studies show that employees are most effective when they're recognized for their efforts. There's a study at the University of Michigan found that a foreman of a construction crew, basic, right, who is interested in people working under him gets more work out of them than the bossy type, who tries force and tries to get them work harder. Because bossy type works, and the reason it works, it's fear-based, but then there's a short-term compliance versus long-term influence. I love what William James said. He says, the deepest principle of human nature is the craving to be appreciated. We want that. And, again, boosting that ego, ability to praise, understanding self-esteem, and realizing that we all have low self-esteem in different aspects of our life. I mean, that's just reality. It could be in a swimsuit. Could be public speaking on a stage. It could be writing something. It could be a variety of things. We all suffer for it. We all try to cover it up. And when you have a healthy self-esteem, you're not worried what other people think. You don't gossip. You can admit that you're wrong. There's a variety of things that happen that you need to realize that everyone's going to suffer there. They don't want to look wrong. It's very rare that you'll see people with healthy self-esteems. I mean, because when people have a low self-esteem, they do cover it up with, I got a better car, better job, bigger house, better title, better education. Because when you have a low self-esteem, you're worried about external things. You have very scarce mentality. You're always comparing yourself to others. And that's our programming. We always will compare our weaknesses to other people's strengths. We're always concerned about who is right versus what is right. And when we have a good, healthy self-esteem, and let me define it here, self-esteem is how much you like yourself. You have an abundance mentality. You don't have to compare yourself. You don't have to pull other people down. You don't need to gossip. And you tend to lift people up instead of tearing them down. Because ego becomes an issue as we walk through this process. Because with that ego, big ego, we find security in possessions, degree, and position, and it goes downhill real fast. So you got to assume the person that you're talking to, whether you're influencing up or other people, boost the self-esteem. Figure out what's going on. Find out what you need to do. Because when you look at the workplace, a study was done to figure out why people weren't happy. The managers always say, money, it's the money, they want more money, it's the money. And, you know, that didn't even make the top, I think it was like number 7 or number 6. Above that, failing to, listen to these, give credit, correct grievances, encourage, criticize in private, failing to ask opinions. The top 5 were all ego and esteem related, period. And so you need to understand exactly what needs to happen with sorry about that. The key factor is to realize that it is an issue, and we need to think about being an issue. So a simple thing you need to understand is the leverage of praise, that it boosts self-esteem, it releases energy, and maybe I'm going to get a calculator out and calculate how much it costs to praise. And the reality is it's zero, but most of us tend to praise because of our own esteem issues. And it's amazing how well this works. In fact, scientists will call it ingratiation, which is another word for praise or bootlicking or brown-nosing, whatever you want to call it, flattery, basically gaining deliberate favor by these things. And it works because we're so motivated by it. Even though the salesperson says, you look great in that dress, you look great in those shoes, it feels good. A study was done at Holland College where it was a smaller college back east. Well, the male psychology students got together, and they were small enough to be able to see everyone on campus and take note to where they just complimented all the women wearing blue. And guess what happened? More women started wearing blue. And they did the same thing with red and kind of switched over. And that's how powerful it is. A simple compliment, praise, feeling included, part of the team. Hey, you're the man for this. You're the expert. You're the person in charge. You're the one who has all the solutions. You've solved this type of thing before. Hey, give me your opinion. Give me your advice. Can you tell me what you would do? I've got this challenge. I've got this issue. And the reason that's so important, not only does it boost esteem, but they're going to help. You're helping them persuade themselves. They're going to come up with a solution you had anyway. I mean, sure, you could tell them what to do, and it might be 5 minutes quicker for you to do that. But then they are going to resist you because they're sensing you're trying to persuade them versus taking an extra 5 minutes. Long-term persuasion works a lot better. Interesting thing happened to me, so going shopping, my wife went into a store I didn't care about, so I go into a suit store. My wife said, you don't need a suit. I'm like, yeah, I'm just looking, right? Just looking, a little market research, and go in, and a sharp-dressed gentleman comes up and says, can I help you? I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for a suit, and this and that. He's all, what size are you? I'm not quite sure. Not quite sure how my size. He says, well, let me measure you. He measured my waist. He measured my chest. He measured my chest again. He looked at me and he was serious. He says, do you work out? I'm like, why, yes, I do. He says, you know, I can tell. And you're going to need the athletic cuts of these suits that we're going to look at today. Now, I bought a suit that day because it was on sale. No other reason. But that's just something to think about. It was so simple, so easy to figure that compliment. Now, of course, that wasn't the only reason. If I didn't really have wanted it, or I didn't trust them, or didn't like them, or didn't like the product, there's a whole other avenue there. But you have to realize how it works. And to do it the right way, let me give you a little formula in here on how to do it the right way. When you praise somebody, we always praise something that's positive. You don't go to a family reunion and say, oh, good for you, still alive. I thought for sure you'd be dead by a heart attack by now. You know, the way you eat, good for you, still alive. Probably not good. So we praise positive things. We want to be sincere, obviously, always sincere. I mean, the no studies show a lot of times it works when it's not sincere. And be specific. This is the most important thing you can learn here. When you praise a low self-esteem person, hey, beautiful dress. Oh, this old thing. Oh, good job today. Oh, you're just saying that. They might not say it out loud. They might be thinking that because you have to be able to be specific, something they can't refute. You know, the way you handled that last customer, was it Jones, was perfect. I liked how you did this, 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 and this. Thank you so much. Can't refute it. That's what happened. Perfect. Be specific as possible. That'll really help you out. So it's positive, sincere, and specific in your praise. Any questions at this point, just ask me over the phone, or you can send me an email there at whypersuasion.com. That's one way we handle these, and I'm happy to take those. I want to hear about redefining and gradation. Again, gradation is just the scientific term for, I guess if you want to really get into it, it's gaining favor by deliberate effort. Compliments, being agreeable, flattery, special recognition. And what gradation does, it increases the likability and promotes an increase in ego. It's also a connectivity issue. When people agree with you and they like your ideas and they're always telling you how good you are, it's good to a certain point. Can it ever be done? Oh, yeah. Can people see through it? Yeah. Not so much the person receiving it a lot of the times, but the other people around them. And that's what usually happens is the person receiving the compliment loves it, but the people around them are like, oh, brother. Okay, they can see right through it. So I'm not. Be sincere. You don't need to, worry about being ingratiated. But those who do are good at ingratiation in the workplace are come across as more competent, more motivated, and get more job promotions. So there's something to be said there with ingratiation. Another one here. What percent of the population has low self-esteem? Well, you want the numbers. I would say 100% in some areas of our life. I mean, if we talk about averages, well, some people might say, I've seen studies at 90%, 80%. I know one study I mentioned in Maximum Influence that when you look at third graders, 80% had healthy self-esteem. So again, how much you like yourself. By the time we got to fifth grade, it was only 20%. By the time we got to 12th grade, it was only 5%. Like, wow, 75% drop and from third grade to 12th grade. Going on. Part of it is the media, especially for females. You need to be this skinny. You need to look like this. Commercials will tell us how we should smell, how we should look, what's popular. Sitcoms don't help, giving us an unrealistic view of society, showing people that never work and never have problems, and they do. They're simple to solve. You have the school systems. There's only one answer to everything, and there's, seven different types of intelligences, and the school only caters to two. That has an issue there. So I would just assume anything you can do to enhance someone's self-esteem by a compliment, by praise, whatever it is, will go a long way. Okay. Another question here. Oh, it was Hollins College, H-O-L-N-I-N-S. It's back east. As we mentioned, this is the psychology students. And somebody sent this quote by William James. Kind of what we talked about there in the beginning. The deepest principle of human nature is the craving to be appreciated. Part of the group, part of the team, part of your network, on your Facebook, having the most friends. All those things really come into play. Next question here. Again, over the phone or via the net's fine. I know many of you are doing recordings or in different time zones, so that's fine. The question is about should you ever challenge somebody's ego? Should you ever try to challenge the ego? And the answer is, well, yeah. There's always times for that, especially with men. I don't know if your department can handle that. Are you the decision maker? And it can be an effective technique. Anytime someone challenges your abilities, to have that instinct to react. Well, you're wrong. I can't handle it. Well, can you handle this project or do we need to get a consultant? Whoa, careful. That could be one that you could use. You have to use this sparingly, but it is something that you could do, especially if they think they're good in that area. Or on the flip side, you can use it to really motivate people. Here's a fun one is, you know, football practice. Or it could be any sports. Somebody's late. Can't have people late. So you have the late player run laps. How dare you be late? You run laps. I know I've done that many times. All right? Then that doesn't work so well. They keep late. Oh, well, so what? A few more laps. Not a big deal. And then they shift to this. And this is a challenge to ego. A challenge probably even to somebody's life. So when the player that's late doesn't have to run laps, they get to watch the rest of the team running laps. You see where we're going with that? So you see this all the time. You might see like MLM meetings where they were looking for go-getters, people who could take action. Or the teacher that tells the students, you know, I want you to do these advanced assignments. And or you can see a salesperson say, well, I guess you don't have the authority to make that decision. So there are times for that. And maybe you do a combination of both. You boost it up front, and then later on you can maybe challenge it a little bit along the way. So that is perfectly acceptable. Perfectly acceptable. Yeah, questions, just ask them over the phone or send them to me. That is perfectly fine. A couple things. We talked about challenging ego. We talked about the formula. But part of it, too, is on the self-persuasion side is what's called the loser's limp. It's coined from sports to where it's amazing how many athletes get hurt right before the big race, get hurt right before the Olympic trials, get hurt, and they call it the loser's limp. You know, every year I run a half marathon, and it's amazing that it's hurt before the race. And I just do it to see, make sure that I don't die. I'm not very fast. Well, people say things like, well, you know, my knee's hurting, I'll just see how I do. And I didn't get enough sleep last night, I'm not sure. And I don't know this course very well. And, you know, I've my hip. And, well, you know, basically before they've even tried what they're doing, they've given themselves a loser's limp, which is basically your pre-excuse for failure. Many people fail because they make excuses before the failure even occurs, just in case, so they have a reason and excuse ahead of time to save face. You know, when you ask someone to play a game, well, I'm not very good, or I'm kind of tired, or I'm not sure, they make excuses before they even try. What happens there is you're feeding your subconscious why it's an excuse, why it's okay to fail. So you're giving your reason why it's okay to fail, you're going to fail. That's just reality. That's a lot of times linked to low self-esteem, not enough confidence in what you're going to do. And you'll see this all the time, not only in your own life, but other people's life. And that will happen all the time. So, get recordings at whypersuasion.com. This is Get Your Loser's Limp. Got a question here about how do you overcome a loser's limp. I think the biggest factor is identifying it. Okay, I'm doing this. I'm making excuses before I start. Why are you doing it? You don't feel confident. This could be an esteem, ego issue. All those could be a part of the factor, but identify it. Realize what you're doing, and then realize, you know, the first time you golf is not that very good of experience. First time you're public speak, the first time you do anything, that's okay. Always realize it will be always be somebody better than you, probably somebody worse. That's part of it. And only get better, you got to put yourself out there and do it. And that's true, and I teach public speakers. Yeah, you're going to blow it. You're going to make mistakes. You know, every time I speak, I make a mistake. It's part of the drill. You put yourself out there. But if you think you're not good, you'll never be good, then that's what's going to happen, A. And B, you'll never put yourself out there and become better at it. Definitely. Question here is, Kurt, I've got a prospect that won't return my phone calls. Well, move on. And that's reality. Sometimes if you're wasting so much time, you got to give them an ultimatum. Fire them. Say, look, I've given you, left you 4 messages. This is your last chance. You need to call me back because of this and this. You can listen to their voicemail more intently to peg their personality and leave a voicemail based on their personality. You know, you can pretty much, if it's quick and to the point, probably an analytical person, if there's music in the background, that tells you a lot about the person. You can ask their gatekeeper for a special favor. You can leave something on the voicemail that's unfinished. You know, Frank, I found the perfect solution for you. I found the reporter was looking for. Hey, I found the website. I did this. And, you know, you're going to be excited when you just leave it unfinished, and so they need to call you. No guarantees, the more of those that you add will do it. There is a big trend of people just don't return phone calls, they're too busy, they don't care. Yes, it's a trend. Yes, it's lame. Yes, I know you don't like it, but we've got to deal with reality. Good question. All right. So let us know. Give us feedback there at whypersuasion.com. Questions, recordings are all available there. If there's topics that you want to hear in the upcoming weeks, let me know. That's also the place, too, if I get stuck in a plane or something happens or I'm out of the country and I can't do the call, I'll post a recording there so you at least have access for the training that week. But anyway, go out there and persuade with power and make the world a better place. See you guys.